So there was one customer that I went up, and it was a lead from Jim's. They just had it was up on a hill. They just had one boundary fence that they wanted done to start with. I built that boundary fence, and I mentioned to them that we could do decking and other stuff as well. And then next thing they said, well, look, we actually need to build a fence around the perimeter of the house to stop the dog getting out. We built a little coop for the chickens. And then she said, well, look, I've got a bit of a dodgy ankle. Can you guys build steps? Well, I was like, yep, we can do that. And then they decided they were going to build one of those DIY sheds in the backyard. Can you build the deck for that? Yep, we can do that. And then they got the DIY, and then they go, oh, this is too hard. Can you do that? So I was like, yeah, we can do that. So a $6,000 fence ended up in about $50,000 worth.
Really? So joined today by Rob Brown, who's our very first Jim's Fencing franchisee in New Zealand, and you're based in a lovely part of the world, which is Christchurch in New Zealand. We were talking before. Before we started recording, you were previously in Melbourne, lived in Melbourne for a long, long time, actually near where I am at the moment, and then you headed over to Christchurch. So what was the reason for going into Christchurch and starting a Jim's Fencing franchise?
We moved back to Christchurch basically because of family being over here. We had a young daughter, and we just wanted to, you know, have be a little bit closer to family. The franchise came about after I'd actually had cancer and recovered from cancer. I'd gone back into, you know, sales, and I'd been in sales in the corporate world for about 25 years. And I'd found it actually was the company I was working at. It was quite stressful, and the culture wasn't conducive to someone that was trying to heal themselves after going through what was quite a traumatic treatment. I'd wanted to run my own business for quite some time. I wanted to have a lot more control and freedom around how I work and what I do. I'd done some fencing, you know, and built some decks, work, you know, helping a mate out, doing some, you know, renovations of properties. So I was quite confident and comfortable with that. So when I seen the Jim's, you know, advertisement come up, I thought, well, look, I know Jim's. I've lived in Australia. You know, it's a great brand. I sort of felt that it was a pretty safe bet around if I'm going to set up a business, should be able to get leads using the Jim's logo. Customers will trust it. You know, they've obviously got a large number of franchises, so it's a system that obviously must work fairly well. So I think it was the fact that I wanted to run my own thing, have my own freedom, but I also wanted the confidence that I could go in and run a business, and there was some support there to help in the areas where I was perhaps a little bit weaker. And yeah, I guess the Jim's brand just gave me that confidence that I could go out and do that.
How have you been going as a fencing franchisee, being the first one there? Because I do remember, we'll be transparent, it was pretty slow to start from what I can remember. Obviously, Rob was spending a bit of money to try and get it going because the brand from Jim's Fencing wasn't as well known. Obviously, Jim's Mulling is well known, but sometimes the other divisions are. So how are you going now?
Yeah, look, pretty good, to be honest. I've got the business set up in a way that, yeah, I typically don't work on Fridays. I'm spending Fridays with my daughter. So within, you know, 3 or 4 days of physical work on the tools each week, which I'm easily able to get these days, more than covers all my costs and my wage, which, yeah, I'm basically at a point now where I can take a six-figure salary.
Fantastic.
So, and that's working 3 or 4 days a week, like I said, on the tools. You know, there's a little bit of extra admin work that I typically have to do in the evenings, but it's definitely given me I'm working hard when I'm working hard, but I've also got a little bit of freedom to do things that are important to me. And I've been able to, you know, set that up by pricing things well, you know, just working out what my bottom line is, what do I need, and then, you know, just doing that. Yeah, you know, so yes, it was a bit of a slog. The first couple of months, you know, it was a real slog. I'd sort of planned for that anyway. Coming into it, I sort of came in understanding that the first couple of months, yeah, I didn't take any money out of the business for the first couple of months. I just kept putting it back in. I planned, you know, I had savings put aside. So I was expecting to have a bit of a ramp up period in order to get things going. So I was never really under any huge financial stress. yeah, it was probably the best way to put it. There have been times, you know, businesses, they have their ups, they have their downs. So there are definitely times that, you know, there's been a little bit less work, but because I was able to work really hard, as I chased some work. I put some posts on, you know, Facebook groups and all that within my local areas, and that sort of got me going. But I was quite smart, and I made sure every job that I did, I was saving money. So even when there were down times, when there wasn't as much work coming in, you know, I was able to just cruise through it. But it's just about, you know, realizing that there are, yeah, it was just about, you know, going into it, you know, with my eyes open, going, okay, cool, what do I need to plan for?
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it now, because you were the first for fencing. So, you know, obviously the gym's brand is known, but sometimes people don't know, you know, we do fencing, we'll do handyman or something like that. So it takes a little bit of time sometimes to get going, but I'm glad to hear you going well now and what you're doing. And how did you find the physicality coming from doing those other jobs to doing what you were doing, and how'd you find it doing and being professional in it now?
Yeah, so physically, I'm 51 now.
Geez, you look pretty good for your age, Rob.
Yeah.
It's not flattering now, but you look pretty good. I thought you were going to say 40 or something.
No, look, considering I've also, you know, dealt with some pretty major disease as well, but look, I lost a lot of weight. And that was another reason for giving fencing a go, to be honest. It was, you know, I lost about 17 kilograms through treatment. So part of doing the fencing was wanting to actually be outside and doing something physical to try and rebuild my body. Yeah, I haven't, you know, got back up to fighting weight, but yeah, I'm definitely a lot fitter and a lot stronger than what I was when I came into it. In saying that, I do have a very strong 21-year-old working that work casual employee that works with me, so you know I'm not doing all the heavy lifting by myself, and he definitely he's a fairly big strong boy, so he definitely, you know, helps out with a lot of that, particularly on the hills. So but yes, it's a physical job,
definitely. Yeah, it definitely is a physical job, fencing. But if you like that stuff and you want to get fit and you want to get strong, it's a really, really good one. It's something with gyms franchise we don't often promote as a benefit, but a lot of guys I know in the mowing, because I see a lot of mowing guys come through, and within 3 months, they've lost 15 kilos because they're just walking 10, you know, they're doing 15,000 steps a day. They're out in the sun from being a corporate job for 20 years, and their mood's better, and their just well-being and their health's a lot better as well. So it's a really good benefit doing the outside work.
Yeah, definitely.
As we all say now, let's talk about some common questions with fencing. So there's some common ones that come up. Actually, our most popular article on gyms.net, it gets thousands of views still, page views a month, is the question of who pays for a fence between neighbors. So that's a very, very open-ended question, but it's something that people search for a lot. So
yeah,
you're the professional in your experience. How does that work when you got two neighbors or three neighbors on a boundary? How does the whole process work? How do you do it?
Yeah, so typically one of the neighbors will come to me and say, look, we need a quote. You know, it's a boundary fence. You know, I need to talk to my neighbour. But I'll do the quote, I'll pass it off to them, they'll talk to the neighbour. And it's usually a 50-50 scenario. Yeah, each neighbour pays half, basically. The invoicing can either be done where, you know, I just invoice the one neighbour and they get the money off the other person. Or once you've accepted a quote, they might say, can you invoice us for half the deposit, the neighbour for half the deposit, and then once the job's done, you know, half the balance to one neighbour, half the balance to the other neighbour. So I guess the short answer is it's usually 50-50. If you've got a situation where one neighbour's, you know, one person's got two neighbours, it might be a case of having to measure, you know, the first part of the fence that belongs to that neighbour, and then, you know, the last part, and then just splitting the quote accordingly, so they can work out, you know, what each of their neighbours owes them.
Now, does the quote get signed off by multiple parties, or is it just one party that you need the quote to be signed off on?
Just one. And you know, the person that says yes, we're going ahead, that's the person I've got the agreement with. That's the person who's responsible for making sure I get paid. And look, that's the person that basically tells me what they want me to do. Quite often, most of the time when there's neighbours involved, most of them get on. Most of them are actually quite amicable. Occasionally, you have it where one neighbor doesn't really speak to the other neighbor, that can be a little bit more challenging. And sometimes you've got, both of them ringing you up, talking to you about stuff. But look, I always put it back to them and say, look, it's not my responsibility to resolve your issues. You guys resolve them. Once you've resolved them, let me know, and then I can come and do the job. So, I've got more important things in life than to resolve a neighborhood dispute that has nothing to do with me. So and that means I have missed out on jobs for it, but at the same time, I haven't taken on anyone else's stress either.
Yeah, it's a very common question that people search for that one. So it's a team effort for that one from people, and we'll let a current affair sort out the neighborly disputes. I was gonna say though, what type of then fences are you doing in your business? There's a lot of service codes in fencing. There's a lot of different things that you guys can do. So do you want to just tell people what are the different types of fences that are popular, or the ones that you find yourself doing more, or that can be done?
Look, the most of the stuff that I do is timber. I do some pool fencing, but the vast majority of it is timber fencing, whether that be standard boundary fences, similar to what they have in Melbourne with the lapped boundary fence, feature fences. I love doing those, using timber that's dressed, just a little bit, nicer. Putting capping, kickboards, scotia, those types of things, slat fencing, slat wooden fencing, or like I said, just your aluminium, similar to pool type fencing. Those are the sorts of main things that I do. I haven't got into doing PVC or iron gates or anything like that. Most of the jobs that I'm taking on usually take one day to a week and a half to do, and that's for two people, with two people working on them. So most of what I'm doing is based around those timber fences, any type of timber fence. It's what I enjoy working with the most, to be honest. But that's the sort of stuff that I'm doing, and there's plenty of that type of work around to do. But also, look, I don't mind doing the aluminium pool type fencing as well. I've got pretty good at that. That's pretty straightforward. But the stuff I enjoy the most is the timber.
Now, I've been out to through the fencing guys and those, and there's obviously before you dig here, which is like, you don't hit any lines and stuff, and there's permits and stuff. So is that something you're saying as well? You handle the permitting process, you make sure, I don't know what the service is in New Zealand, but you would call, you get the plans for any lines and stuff. Is that your responsibility? Whose responsibility is that in the process?
No, so you don't need permits to build a fence up to 2.5 metres in New Zealand. So there's no permits required. With regards to services, most of the time, for example, internet services, the cable or the fiber optic cable in New Zealand, it's marked in front of the house where the line that cable goes in is. So we know where that is pretty much to start with. But any situations where a customer might have something else underneath that, on their property, we do say to them, look, if there's any other services, you need to let us know exactly where they are. They need to be marked out. So we do put that onto the customer. Once we know where they are, we can sort of go from there. So, that sort of responsibility is the customers. We make it clear to them that anything that's not marked out, if we hit something that they haven't marked out or talked to us or shown us, then we won't be liable for that. If we hit something that they have shown us, well, obviously, then that's a different cup of tea. So we're quite upfront with them on that. But look, most of the services here in New Zealand are actually down quite deep, and we're digging primarily just down to about 600 millimetres.
That's great.
Or 2 foot.
Yeah, that's great. And we've got to also point out to people that you guys are fully insured with liability, which covers third-party property damage and third-party bodily injury, and also police checks. So the good thing with using gyms is that is a guaranteed thing we have in place. We advertise that, so we've got to make sure that every franchisee has that, whereas a lot of people might do fencing, might say they do, and they might not have it, and different things like that.
And that's something that every quote that I send out I state the fact that we have that $5 million of liability insurance. So should anything, you know, go wrong, there's a simple fix for it. So, and that's a great selling point. In fact, when I first started, you know, just the fact that it was a Jim's brand gave customers confidence in giving me a 50% deposit, because I get a 50% deposit up front. So, you know, those sorts of things add a ton of credibility. So that stuff all gets explained in, when I'm sending out quotes.
It's a great point, Rob. We've had a few examples, like we'll be transparent. We've had a few examples where we've had ex-franchisees maybe 2 years down the track, you know, are still operating, you know, sometimes it's Jim's Fencing, which it's very hard to stop. You can send a legal letter and stuff and we try to do it. And they, customers presume they're with us and they take deposits, right? And because they trust us so much, and then we have to try and deal with it and things like that. So yeah, it's a really, really big thing. And, you know, if you're a customer and an independent person comes, like, yes, there is a certain amount of trust, but with Jim's, you've just got, if something like that does happen, or, you know, the head office is there and you know, Jim himself will get involved. And I know personally Jim's paid out over the years thousands of dollars for some things, especially just to help customers get sorted, which I don't think, you just don't get that peace of mind with anyone but Jim's, I think.
Yeah, no, it was huge, especially starting off. Now that I've got my name out there and people know me, you know, people know that I'm trustworthy, you know, it's fine. But that getting started when no one knew who the hell this guy was, yeah, that was a big thing. And I've had customers say, well, look, because you're with Jim's, I'm happy to pay the deposit when I first got started. Now it's not a problem, but that was a big help.
Yeah, it's a great point. And you know, we advertise over here as well. We say to customers, we're not the cheapest, but you've got that backing and you've got all the stuff that comes with the security of that. Whereas if you know, if you go for the cheapest quote sometimes and you've got a guy who's not in uniform, he's not signed, looks a bit sketchy what he's doing, and you hand all over this money, it can be very, very risky.
Yeah.
And we hear some horror stories.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've seen some horror stories from people that have got someone to build a fence for them and it just looks terrible. But they've got no recourse. They can't go back to them. The person's not going to give them their money back.
Yeah, I'll point out that it's a great point. And also, what people don't know is sometimes we have a workmanship guarantee as well. So customers, like your work, for example, is guaranteed, right? So if you do a fence and then 15 years later or whatever, or something happens and it's workmanship or whatever, this goes for anyone in the Jim's group. You know, we have a warranty fund and Jim will pay for it. And he has done that for some divisions, right? So that warranty fund as well, which is really good peace of mind for customers. I was going to say as well, with fencing, is there any particular types of fences that you recommend to customers, or you just go on what the customer says, or what do you recommend for the climate in Christchurch and where you are?
Look, it's a bit of both. Sometimes you go to a customer's place and they'll have a really clear idea of what they want, and they'll give you some pictures. I'll have a look and I'll go, yep, I can do that, and go away. Sometimes you go and a customer won't really know what they want. Look, most of the time they know they want a wooden fence, but how they want that designed. Look, sometimes it's just asking a few more questions. Why is it that they're wanting the fence? A lot of the time it's to keep the dog in. So, okay, well, is the dog a jumper? Is the dog, you know, not a jumper? Yeah, and then we can work out, well, do we need to build a higher fence, or can we get away with a smaller fence? So it's really, when customers know what they want, they know what they want. Boom, we go away, we do that. When they're not too sure, it's really a case of asking them a few more questions and getting an idea of what they're actually trying to achieve by having it. And then sort of, I'll show them, we can do a paling one like this, or we can, do a slap fence like this, or... It's really sort of giving them some options. On my phone, I've got a bunch of pictures of different fences I've built. So I'll just go through that, and I'll just go, this is a really popular one. Yeah, if they're looking for a feature fence, kickboard capping, we can use shiplap palings, or we can use press palings, and sort of just giving them the options. It's quite a hard one to give you an exact idea, but it's really when they know what they want, that's what you quote them. If they're not too sure, it's asking some questions and showing them some options, and then go from there.
What's the general time frame from someone, let's say you give someone a quote, to getting there to building it or for the completed job? What's the general rough time frame?
Look, once they accept a quote, most people will accept the quote within 1 to 2 weeks. If it's taking longer than that, chances are they're not going to accept it. Or, yeah, they're having to deal with a neighbour or Housing New Zealand over here, trying to get some sort of approvals or something like that. But I would say probably 90% of the customers that I end up doing work for will accept a quote within a couple of weeks. Once they've accepted that quote, it's typically anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks before I can go on site and do it. And that just depends on what the workload's like. But usually, I'm 2 to 4 weeks out. I could probably get myself, I could probably get myself to a point where I could be 6 or 8 weeks out if I price myself cheaper. But I've sort of worked out, what I want for my lifestyle, and I've sort of done my pricing around that. So I'm not the cheapest. I'm not the most expensive either, but I charge a good price for a good quality fence, and people are prepared to pay for that.
That's
people that want something done quickly.
That's a great point, Robin. Look, we advertise, it's sometimes some franchises will sit with me say you shouldn't be saying, but Jim quite often says, we're not the cheapest service, but we're not the most expensive, but we're someone who wants a good quality job and, a good product, and they'll pay a fair price for it. So that's what we say. We openly say we're not the cheapest in the market, and we don't want to be the cheapest in the market, because that doesn't mean for you guys, how can you make a sustainable living if you are the cheapest in the market? And also the the clientele who always just want the cheapest, and the cheapest can generally be very, very difficult. And it's generally the customers who are prepared to pay a bit more and understand a bit more. They might be small business owners themselves, or I understand that sort of thing, that just leads for a better relationship and experience for everyone.
Exactly. To try and be the cheapest here in Christchurch, it's actually a really competitive market, and to try and compete with people that are, doing it really cheaply, I wouldn't be able to sustain my lifestyle. Yeah. I'd struggle working 6 days a week to actually pay myself a reasonable wage and put a roof over the head, and also to have a business that I know that can sustain me should there be some downtime.
Yeah, and customers that go that route, those crews might disappear in 6 months, or if something goes wrong, they won't be able to get onto them. So you're just taking a risk if you're a customer going for that cheapest option with no backing or security in any way, especially with the fence, because it's something that's there for so long. You need it to be reliable, and if something does happen, you want to have some sort of recourse, which with Jim's Fencing and the Jim's Group, they do have, whereas with other crews and stuff, you might be able to come in and do it far cheaper. You just got no recourse at all, especially on a fence, which is it's a big problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say as well, when should someone replace the fence or look at it? Is it just something where it's just a general look and wear and tear, or is it leaning one way? Or what are some signs that people should do or should look at when they want to replace their fence?
Look, definitely if it's starting to lean and you can see that the bottoms around the post are getting that sort of mouldy, rotted look, definitely then the palings over time will rot towards the bottom. They'll be cracking and splitting. That's time when you should start to think about it. Look, some people will leave it until, the wind blows it over, which, fortunately that happens here in Christchurch. We had a big storm 3 days ago, and I've had 3 leads since then, and one of them's already had the insurance company sign off. But that's because, they've left their fences too long, and a big gust of wind has come and just snapped the post. So, you probably don't want to leave it that long. But, every customer's different. And I think depending on whereabouts they live and whether it's a more affluent place, they'll typically won't, once it starts looking a bit shabby, they'll replace it. Places, I guess, that aren't as affluent, they might leave it a little bit longer. But definitely once they notice that the fence is leaning and you can see that there's a little bit of rot towards the bottom of the fence, it's probably not too far.
Now, have you been getting a few referrals as well? Because fencing is a good one for referrals. So, you know, if you get a good fence, it's something that people refer, and a lot of the guys over here get a lot of referrals if they're really good. So have your core as well, which is something I'd love you to talk a little bit about, is generating work via Facebook groups, which is something more and more franchisees were encouraging to do because it's a good source of work. So maybe do you want to talk about those couple of things?
Yeah, so definitely beginning to get some referral work now. And I'm also getting return work, which is strange with fencing. But
yeah.
So there was one customer that I went up, and it was a lead from Gems. It was up on a hill. They just had one boundary fence that they wanted done to start with. I built that boundary fence, and I mentioned to them that we could do decking and other stuff as well. And then next thing they said, well, look, we actually need to build a fence around the perimeter of the house to stop the dog getting out, but we want it chain link. So we ended up building that. And then we built a little coop for the chickens down the bottom of the hill. And then she said, well, look, I've got a bit of a dodgy ankle. Can you guys build steps to so I can walk down the steps rather than trying to go down a steep hill? I was like, yep, we can do that. And then they decided they were going to build a DIY, one of those DIY sheds. They were going to turn into a sleep out in the backyard. Can you build the deck for that? Yep, we can do that. Then they got the DIY shed, and they go, oh, this is too hard. Can you do that? So I was like, yeah, we can do that. So a $6,000 fence ended up in about $50,000 worth.
Really? Wow. That's awesome.
So, and that was just from doing a great job on the first fence. Since then, I've had other customers that have had, yeah, that we've done some fencing work for. And then, you know, yesterday I did a job where we did some fencing work before Christmas last year, and he rang me a few weeks ago and said, look, Mike, we've got a two-year-old. He's beginning to run around all over the place. We need this little section done. Can you do that? Yep, no problem. So we went back out and did that yesterday and put up a couple of gates for him to stop the two-year-old.
Baby-proofing. People would have thought that would be a serious thing to do, baby-proofing.
Baby-proofing and dogs. They keep us in business. and the wind. But these same people are also, you know, I'm getting phone calls from people, and they say, hey, look, you did some work for such and such. Can you come and do that? So I've only been going just over, I think, about 15 months now. And that's beginning to happen. I'm getting, you know, probably every couple of weeks I get phone calls from people that have been referred or someone that I've already done work for asking to, you know, to come out and quote. The Facebook page is definitely, when I first got the franchise, obviously I knew you couldn't actively promote gyms on Facebook because to a Facebook community because it might go beyond your territory. So my wife actually, because I didn't know what to do, so my wife actually posted, she was a member of about seven different Facebook community groups. So she actually posted in them, hey, my husband's just started a fencing company. You know, here's a picture of some work that he's done. And look, you know, if you need any fencing work, support a local, give Rob a call and put my phone number on it. So it was really simple, but the support a local thing, and I guess also coming from her rather than me trying to sell it, made a bit of an impact. But in about 3 days, and this is what actually got me going, in about 3 days I got 20 phone calls. And I ended up getting six jobs off that, and all of those jobs, those jobs will average somewhere between $5,000 and $7,000 projects each. So that sort of got me going. Sorry, there's the cat. That sort of got me is what got me up and going. And then the advertising from gyms started kicking in after that. Yeah. So then the leads started coming through from gyms. But that initial thrust was, you know, from her, because, you know, the first few weeks we weren't getting any leads.
Yeah,
it obviously takes time, but yeah, it's obviously a bit of a different story now compared to a year and a half ago, because no one knew of gyms in Christchurch. But at that first starting point, that's what we did. I also went and dropped off. I had some gym's fencing magnets made up, and I went round and I just in my own area, and I dropped off one of those at every house that had a slightly dodgy fence. So it was a fridge magnet, and I got three or four quotes out of that. I probably dropped about 100 in one area. I got about three or four quotes out of it, and a couple of those ended up going here, I think. And one of those was a boundary fence, which I did. It was quite a significant one. It was about an $8,000 project. But then the guy that he shared about the boundary with, obviously I was doing it for both of them. I ended up doing some more work for him, some small projects for him as well, which was pretty cool.
That's great. Well, I'll give you a bit of an update on the group stuff. So with Facebook groups, I'm actually doing a New Zealand social media training for our new franchisees. We're doing training at the moment, working on the video tomorrow. But with groups, they're really powerful, as you've just seen with your wife. They're extremely powerful, and more customers now are going to that before or using that before going to Google. So we're sort of changing a little bit in how we do it. But what you can do with groups now is some groups allow you to join as a business. So you can join as your Jim's Fencing Christchurch business page, and you can post and promote yourself in there. Yeah. If you do that as Jim's Fencing, because you're the only one in Christchurch, you could check with Rob about this, but if you're the only one in Christchurch, you could probably put a mobile number on this. But the blanket rule is you've got to use the call center number, just because someone outside the church or whatever can see you. But because you're the only person in Christchurch, that's not a worry. So you could probably get approval to do Jim's Fencing Christchurch and put your mobile number on there, actually posted in those groups and get those groups late.
We've just a month or so ago had a second Christchurch franchise.
Oh, we did. So it needs to be 0800-454-654. Yeah. But that way, if you're the territory holder or where they call up, you'll get the lead anyway. But you can also do it as, so that's one site. If you advertise as your Jim's Fencing Christchurch page, which you're allowed to do in these groups, you're just going to use the divisional details.
Yeah.
But you can also, what your wife done was really good. You can also do that as yourself. So you can say, I'm Rob Brown. I've got a fencing business. As long as it doesn't have the word gyms or there's no gyms association in that post, you can actually put a mobile number on there as well.
Yeah.
So that's generally the rule. So as soon as you've got gyms associated in something which is on social media and people from outside the territory can see it, it's 0800 and divisional details. If you do it as Rob Brown with no association of gyms in anything with what you do, you can say, I'm in a fencing business and put your mobile number on there as well. Because a lot of people in those groups, gyms franchisees, will have personal Facebook profiles. You've got to have a personal Facebook profile to operate a business page. So that when they join those groups, they can spot it and stuff like that. And we find that happens a bit, especially in our dog wash division. So the reason why I talk about this is our dog wash division does this a lot, because they generate like 90% of their work from Facebook and from groups and stuff. So that's an update. If you do want to use your page to comment in groups and stuff, you can do that by all means.
Yeah, I know that there's a couple of groups that do allow businesses to join, but there's quite a few that don't they don't allow selling on it, unfortunately. But there are definitely a couple that do show up, which I know that I could join up to.
Well, the best tactic is what your wife did. You know, that's something where people will trust that, especially being a lady as well. I think it's more reputable that for regards to tradies and stuff. Same thing would go over here. So it's a really good tactic as well. And it's one I'm going to remember. I'm going to use your story in our training, and I do your fantasy training. I'm going to mention that to our guys that is a tactic they can use if they would like to do it. So that's a really good one. I'm glad to hear it worked really well for you.
It worked really well. And because I've tried promoting myself on the same thing since then, and it just hasn't had anywhere near the impact. I think getting the wife to do it.
You have to give her a clip, mate. You have to give her a commission per lead.
She gets a clip.
So are you happy with where you are now, though? Where you are at the moment? Are you happy with where you're going at the moment, or what's your plans for your business moving forward?
Yeah. So look, I've actually spoken to Rob about this already. We're actually planning on moving back to Australia in the next probably six months or so. I have some other business interests that I'm going to pursue when I do get to Australia. That'll be, I guess, more aligned to what my previous background was, and that will be in some sort of coaching and consulting type type business. So, look, I've spoken to Rob about putting the franchise on the market. So we're sort of just going through a bit of a process about working out the values and all that type of thing. But I guess, you know, I'm in this situation now where we can do that based on the fact that I've actually, you know, I guess I've been able to build my confidence around running a business using gyms and gym system. And you know, I'm really grateful for that because it's now sort of set me and my family up to be able to, you know, move forward with the next phase of our lives. So, yeah, long term, I'm probably only going to be with gyms in the next 6 months or so.
Yeah.
But, you know, So that's ultimately where we're at.
Where are you going to move back to?
It's definitely Melbourne. Yeah, I would love to be in Byron Bay, but I think...
That's very expensive, Byron Bay now. Maybe 10 years ago, if you went there, it would have been right. Well,
I think the price of things might be a little bit out of the budget at the moment. But also we both love Melbourne. We miss the food in the inner west, nipping down to Footscray all that sort of stuff we miss. So we'll be coming back to Melbourne, and I guess my network of business people and associates is most of it's in Melbourne. So for what we're looking to do next, it sort of makes sense for us long term to be there.
Well, it's great for you to say. It's a different type of interview stating. You never had anyone say they're exiting in 6 months on this sort of thing, which is great to hear because people with gyms realize they think they do a gyms franchise and then that's it for the next 20 years, which gym obviously wants every franchisee to stay for 20 years or 25 years. We've got people there for 30 years, but we've also got a lot of people who do what you do. They come in, they might do 3 years and then get a really good taste for business and get some confidence up and whatever. There might be something they're else passionate about or whatever, and they leverage into that and they go on to have multi-million dollar businesses doing this or this or this or all these other things, and they use gyms as the start on that journey to do it. So it's quite a common thing as well, which we have. And gyms also, I know, very proud of people who do that. And we have people who email Jim 10 years later, they've been with us for 10 years and they own multiple things or dealing with this and that, which is completely unrelated. But they will say, I'll still email Jim and say, look, I was doing Jim's mowing, you know, 10 years ago that really gave me that bug or whatever it is, and they'll go and do it. So it's a really good credit to yourself, obviously, but we really enjoy, well, I know Jim really enjoys sharing and hearing about these sorts of things where you start here or you get back going here and you go and do these other things as well. So it's a really good thing to say as well. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah, that was another thing about joining gyms and knowing, yeah, and having confidence that I could make it work in gyms was that it would also give my wife confidence that, okay, yeah, if he can run a business building fences when he's been wearing a suit for 25 years and do it successfully, you know, it gives her a lot of confidence that, you know, when I go into something else, that, well, if he's doing something that's a little bit more aligned with what he's spent 20 odd years doing, she'll probably have a fair bit of confidence in me. And she does now. Not that she didn't in the past, but being able to sort of ride out some challenges that we've had starting off the, you know, gym's fencing, and get through that and be sane and have money in the bank, and you know, that's sort of given her a lot of confidence that, okay, cool, we can do whatever we want basically, and that next business, you know, we can make that happen as well.
That's great, mate. And look, I'm glad you shared this story. I'm really glad to hear you're doing well. You've had a great, obviously, a journey through where you've done, and you've obviously worked really, really hard to get where you are. But it's really good to hear, and I'm looking forward to sharing this story with Jim. Actually, I'll see Jim when I go in later today and actually tell him about this because I think it's a good one to share with him. And thanks for talking about this story today on that podcast. And maybe see you around Footscray getting a bar, me, or a fur or something like that, and we'll do it right back.
Sweet, you'll definitely see us around there. Even though we're in Yarraville, we were in Footscray every week. At the most famous shop. I can't remember the name of it, but you probably know the one that's always busy and sometimes people are lining up to get in.
That's how you know it's good. If there's no line, you know, if there's no one in there, avoid it. There's a big line at the front. Just wait.
Yeah. it was good. I actually wouldn't mind getting down to Springvale as well and getting some of the crispy pork rolls down there.
So, Brad Ebenezer is in Victoria Street, Richmond as well. It's gone a little bit downhill with what they've got going on there at the moment, but Victoria Street, Richmond is still really good.
Sweet. Awesome.
No worries. Thanks, Rob. I'll get that voucher to you, mate, and I appreciate you for your time. I'm glad to meet you.
No worries. You too, Joel. Thanks a lot. Really enjoyed the chat.
No worries. Thanks, Rob. See you, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the episode of the Gyms Podcast. If you want to learn more about the Gyms Group, head to gyms.net or call us on 131 546 Australia or 0800 454 654 New Zealand. And if you did like the episode as well, please make sure you leave a review or a comment or a thumbs up or a comment on the video as well. We appreciate your support. And until next episode, we hope you have a great week.